held accountable for what he did to you.
I'd rather not be dead.
Yeah, it's hard to argue with that.
He would, Lori said solemnly. He wants a lot of people dead.
It's my job to make sure he doesn't get what he wants.
I hope you do your job, because so far he's getting it.
Hard to argue with that, too, Eve thought, and slid into the more comforting dark. While Eve talked to the dead in dreams, Reinhold gloated over his latest luck. He'd known the old hag had some money, but he hadn't known she had money. By the time he emptied her accounts, he'd have $3,984,000 in his brand new name, or the name to come once they generated that new ID. When he added it to what he'd, inherited from his parents and gotten from his former bitch girlfriend, he'd be rolling in more than $4 fucking million. Jesus. He thought the $175,000 he'd had, minus what he'd spent, was a big deal. It was nothing compared to this. He could have anything he wanted now. Anyone he wanted now. He'd never have to work a day in his life to live like a king. Except for the killing, that is. But what was that old bullshit his father always tossed around? If you love your work, you're never working, something like that. Who knew the stupid bastard would actually be right about anything? And now he had a droid, a pretty classy one, reprogrammed to follow his orders and only his. He'd really enjoyed that when he'd ordered up a midnight snack. Miss Farnsworth, you sneaky bitch! You've been sitting on all this money with that fat ass of yours. Why the hell did you waste all that time dragging it around the classroom? She only stared at him with dead, tired eyes, rimmed with red from fatigue and tears, and from the occasional backhand he delivered to keep her sharp. She'd love teaching, she thought. He'd never understand the satisfaction and fulfillment of honest work. He was rotten down to the core. And she knew now he'd kill her before he was done. He'd make her suffer first. He'd hurt her in every way he could devise. Then he'd kill her. We've still got work to do, but some of it's gonna have to wait. I've gotta get some shut-eye. He rose, stretched luxuriously. You oughta get some, too. You look like hell. He laughed, cracking himself up so much, he bent over from the waist. Tomorrow we're going to finish routing all that money. And the big new assignment? We're going to work on that ID. I need your best work now, remember that? Remember how you said that a million times? I need your best work, Jerry. Stupid bitch. He gave her a last backhand, in case she forgot. See you in the morning. He gave her chair a good shove so it slammed against the wall, then strolled out, calling for lights off on the way. She sat quivering in the dark, then steeling herself, began to squirm, rock, twist her aching limbs in the faint hope she could loosen her bonds. Eve woke to the familiar and the knot. The life-affirming scent of coffee hit first, to her eternal gratitude. The sense of an empty bed with Rourke close by. Those were every morning things. But the bed wasn't her bed, and no sky window above it showed her the filtered roof of the world. Hotel, she thought. Downtown, near work. And a dead body waiting for her at the morgue. She sat up, glanced blearily around at the muted gold of the walls, the single white orchid, she thought it was an orchid, arching out of a deep blue pot on a dresser.
and caught the muted mumble from the parlor beyond. Media reports, stock reports, she concluded. Rourke usually kept the sound off as he reviewed all that from the bedroom sitting area. She rolled out, snagged the robe draped at the foot of the bed where the cat would often be, and shrugging into it, went out to join him. Already showered and dressed for business world domination in a dark suit. Some blonde in hot red sat at a glass counter on screen, talking about the market holding its breath in anticipation of the potential acquisition of Eurocom by Rourke Industries. Eve wandered over to pick up his coffee cup, down the contents.
You can have your own, you know.
I'm going to.
What's Eurocom? Why are you potentially acquiring it? And how come it makes everybody hold their breath?
It's been the major player in Europe's joint communication development over the last decade or so.
Because I can, and it will slide nicely into other holdings in that region.
And because it's been badly mismanaged the last few years, resulting in lost jobs and revenue, and the acquisition should right that ship as well as add to it.
Okay.
She walked to the table where plates already sat under silver warmers, got a cup of her own, and came back to pour coffee from the pot on the low table in front of Rourke.
Why aren't you over there making the deal?
Because Eurocom is the one under the gun, and I had them come to me here.
Your turf, their handout.
Close enough.
Much of it's been negotiated through Link and Hollow conferences, and my liaison there. As it happens, I just signed off about 10 minutes ago while having my coffee, or what had been my coffee.
The announcement should hit shortly.
Eve wagged her thumb at the screen.
Blondie thinks it's a big deal.
Blondie's quite right.
He held up his cup so Eve could fill it.
After the transition, which on my terms will be swift and clean and final, there'll be some restructuring.
Heads rolling. Asses booted, more like. And some retooling.
Within the next quarter, we'll generate about 500,000 new jobs.
He changed lives, she thought, sitting there in his slick suit, coolly drinking coffee. With an eye toward profit, sure, and expansion, absolutely. But his go-ahead changed the life of someone sitting in a pub or cafe across the Atlantic, worrying about paying the rent.
The screen flashed like a sunspot before the banner hyping breaking news swept over it.
Even with the sound low, Eve heard the excitement in the blonde's voice as she announced the Eurocom Rourke Industries deal was confirmed.
Well then,
Rourke got to his feet, gave Eve a light good morning kiss.
Let's have breakfast. They do a fine full Irish here.
Just like that, she thought. She sat with him, uncovered the plate to reveal the abundance of food.
Jesus, what starving Irishman had first come up with the concept of the full deal?
How much of it goes to Ireland? She asked him.
The Eurocom thing.
He shot her an amused smile.
Want the figures, do you? Should I have a report sent over?
She picked up her fork. Definitely not. I'm just curious if any of this plays in with your family.
Most of my people are farmers, as you know. But there are some who don't work the land, and they may find their way onto the payroll.
You don't look as rested as I'd hoped.
Weird dream.
Dream, she repeated, so he understood there'd been no nightmare. The latest Vic and I had this conversation in her apartment. She's pretty bummed out about being dead.
It's difficult to fault her for that.
Yeah, she doesn't want her parents to see her looking the way Reinhold left her. In the dream, I mean.
Projecting, Eve said as she began to eat, and I shouldn't be.
Why not? You feel for her.
It's not my job to feel for her. It's my job to find and stop Reinhold. You do both, and that's what makes you, you. My subconscious is putting words in her mouth. Watching her, Rourke cut into meaty Irish-style bacon. Your subconscious, driven by your innate observation skills and your unique sensitivity. I wouldn't discount it. None of that tells me where he is now or what he's planning next. You've generated considerable data in a short amount of time. She had. They had, she knew, but time's the problem. He's like a kid with a brand new toy and nobody to tell him to put it down. Or an addict who's just discovered a new drug and thinks there's an unlimited supply. He's not going to pace himself. I'd agree with that, exactly. And I'd also say that's his mistake, or one of them. It'll be the rush, the gorging on it that trips him. Gorging, yeah. He spent his whole life accumulating and hoarding grudges, and now he's figured out what to do with them. Stabbing, bludgeoning, strangulation. She scooped up eggs as she spoke, fueling up. It's all so much fun, he can't decide what to try next. And there's so many ways to kill. And better, so many ways to cause pain and torment first. Fighting frustration, she stabbed at potatoes. He's got a target already, and I can't know who. If you can't narrow down his next victim, you might narrow down his potential space. As you've said, he has to land somewhere. Yeah, he needs a place of his own. And money to get it, to furnish it in the fashion he deserves. A narcissist, Mira said. So he'd believe he deserved the best. Maybe he'll blow a big chunk of what he's got on his headquarters. From the timeline, he didn't have much time to scout out places yesterday. He may have done some via link or web, but he'd need to see, to walk around in the space, to imagine himself there. Maybe that's today's agenda. But he has to change his looks first, has to alter them enough. He has to know we have his face, and he's not stupid. That's something else, Nuccio said. You had quite a conversation. Well, we both felt pretty crappy. Won't most of his potential victims have holiday plans? At her blank look, he shook his head. Thanksgiving Eve. 2 days from now. Shit! That's right! Family groups, people leaving town or coming in. That's something to look at. It struck her. Yours! Yours are coming in tomorrow. They are, yes, and will perfectly understand if you're busy on an investigation and don't have much time for them. But the house would be full of people, noise, conversations, questions. She liked them, really, she did, but life happens, darling, he reminded her, however ill the timing. I guess it does. Maybe luck will turn our way and away from him, and I'll have him in a cage before the turkey's stuffed. Let's hope for that. It's going to take more than hope. She pushed away from the table. I'd better start working on turning that luck, because the little bastard's somewhere right now thinking about his next kill. He felt great. A good night's sleep, a long hot shower, and a hearty breakfast, prepared and served by asshole, his new droid. He ordered the droid to clean up, to ignore any link communications or anyone who might come to the door during the process, then shut down. The idea of anyone trying to contact Farnsworth made him consider she might have appointments. Armed with her passcodes, he checked both her calendar and her email history on her bedroom link. The fat, ugly blob had a salon appointment at 2. As if anyone would look at her twice anyway. He found the salon contact, sent a quick text canceling. And she was booked to have Thanksgiving dinner with some losers named Shell and Myra, who were probably as ugly and worthless as she was. He considered that, decided to leave it alone for now. If he still needed her in the house on Thursday, he'd make up some excuse at the last minute. It amazed him to see just how many dates and appointments ran through her calendar. Lunches, dinners, more salons, groomers for the little rat dog, currently half dead in the hallway. Maybe he should finish him off. But then again, helping himself to a post-breakfast cappuccino, Reinhold walked upstairs. He wrinkled his nose at the smell as he walked into the office and found Ms. Farnsworth slumped in the chair, urine dripping down her legs, blood staining the tape around her wrists and ankles. "Jesus, you pissed yourself! You stink!" He held his nose with one hand, waved the other in front of his face, his eyes gleaming bright as her head rolled up. "Now I have to get asshole," I renamed the droid. "I have to get asshole in here to clean this up. Oh, by the way, I canceled your salon appointment. Saved you money, because no amount of it could make you less ugly, fat, and disgusting." He walked back out, called downstairs. "Hey, asshole! Miss Farnsworth pissed all over the place. Get up here and clean this mess up." Stepping back in, he did what he thought of as a manly pose. One arm cocked up, the other across his body. "So, what do you think of the new look? Frosty, huh?" He'd spent considerable time with the hair product, lightening his color by degrees, using the tools supplied to streak it through so he now sported a sun-washed, streaky blonde. He'd trimmed it, though he thought he needed some pro help there, but it lay slick over his head. He'd mated that with layers of bronzing product. He thought he looked as though he'd spent a month at some fancy tropical resort. The eyes had been trickier, and he'd go pro there next time, too. But now they were electric blue. Using some of the hair he'd trimmed off, he'd added a soul patch to the center of his chin. And though it had hurt like fucking hell, he'd used the kit he'd bought to pierce his left ear, which now sported a small gold hoop. "I look successful, right? Young, rocking, rich. I've got an appointment with a realtor to look at a couple apartments today. Gotta look good." He barely glanced over when the droid came in with cleaning tools. "He's mine now." He gave the formerly named Richard, dignified in his dark uniform and silver-templed hair, a pat on the back. "Just like everything else that was yours, so don't even think about giving him orders." "Oh, that's right. Still can't talk. I'll fix that as soon as asshole's done here. Be right back." When he strolled out, Ms. Farnsworth rolled her eyes toward the droid. She screamed, "Help me!" But all that sounded was a weak moan. It went about its business efficiently, as she'd programmed its domestic duties herself. She tried rocking and bucking in the chair, but her limbs were numb. The only sensation was the burning where she'd rubbed her flesh raw in her attempts to get free. She'd loosened the tape a little in places, or maybe that was just desperate hope. But she thought if she could regain a little strength, she could loosen it more. If she just had a few sips of water for her burning throat, anything, anything to ease the pain. Even the humiliation barely touched her now, though when she'd no longer been able to control her bladder, she'd wept. It didn't matter, didn't matter, didn't matter, just pee, just a normal human function. If she peed, she lived, and as long as she lived, she had a chance to survive and pay the bastard back. She'd kill him if she could. She'd never harmed another human being in her life, but she would cheerfully end his by any means possible. She tried to speak again, slowly, clearly. If she could only get the droid to understand a few words. But the garbled mumbles meant nothing, and he continued his task, then gathered up the cleaning supplies. Reinhold walked in as the droid walked out, as if he'd been waiting. "You still stink, but it's a little better, and sometimes we have to work under unpleasant conditions." He'd brought the nippers with him, waved them at her as he crossed to her. "Scream, lose a finger." He ripped the tape away. She let out a gasp, as much in shock as grabbing air. "You?" Her voice croaked out, barely audible. "You have the money." "I sure do, but we're gonna hide it really, really good. You know how, and you're gonna show me. And I need a few other things."
"I need water. Please."
"You'll just piss yourself again."
"I'm dehydrated."
"Bitch and complain," he thought, his jaw tightening. "Just like his mother. Just like bald Lori. Too fucking bad. Now, what we're going to do this morning is make me a nice new ID and get the data up. I've worked out everything I want. Your job is to walk me through making it happen. Got that?"
"No."
He pressed the nippers against her cheek. "Need me to repeat it?"
"Go ahead. Use them."
She coughed as the words scored her throat like hot needles.
"I'm done helping you."
"Helping me? Is that what you think you're doing? Helping me?" He swung back, bashed the back of his fist in her face. "You're following orders, bitch. I don't need your fucking help. You do what you're told." She made herself look him in the eye, even as she felt blood slide out of her nose, and shook her head. He turned around, walked out. She gathered herself, digging for breath, digging for strength. She'd scream, however much it hurt, however much he hurt her for it. She'd scream and someone would hear.
"Please, God."
Before she could, he came back, holding her little dog. Snuffy whimpered when he saw her, and she could see from his eyes he was hurt, and still he wagged his tail. Fear came back, raw as the skin on her wrists.
"Don't hurt him. He's just a little dog."
"Too late for that. He's already hurt. Probably needs the vet. Maybe I'll take him to a vet if you do what you're told."
"You won't."
He shrugged. "Maybe yes, maybe no. But if you don't..." He turned the nippers, pushed Snuffy's paw out. "I'll just start snipping away." Tears stung her eyes, ached in her burning throat.
"Don't, please, Jerry."
"Wouldn't take many snips with a rat dog like this." To motivate her, and because it was fun, he pinched the dog hard so it yelped. "But I'd start small. This paw, that paw. Maybe his tongue so he can't yap.
I'll do it. Don't hurt him, and I'll do it."
Smiling, he closed the snips a little more. "Maybe I'll snip just one paw because you said no first."
"Please, please."
The tears rolled now. She couldn't stop them. He was a sweet old dog. He was family. He was defenseless.
"I'm sorry. I'll make the ID for you and upload all the data you want. I'll make it perfect. I'll hide the money. I'll bury it so nobody can trace it."
"Damn right you will. And one mistake, just one? He loses a paw. You lose a finger." He dumped the dog in her lap, where Snuffy whimpered at her. Reinhold sat at the desk, cracked his knuckles. Let's get started! Chapter 11. Eve went straight to the morgue. No need, that she could see, to pull Peabody in, not for this. The investigation was better served with her partner checking out the shops they knew Reinhold had visited, and at her desk, tracking down pawnbrokers who might be slow or reluctant to report the purchase of items sold by a murderer. She traveled the white tunnel as she had the day before, and thought, yeah, it was past time for luck to turn. She found Morris with Lori Nucho. As he often did, he'd chosen music to suit either his mood or the victim. This was light, kind of breezy, with a high, clear female voice singing hopefully about what lay behind the bend in the road. He looked up from his work when Eve entered, ordered the music to low volume.
I'd hoped not to see you again quite so soon.
Same here, she said as she joined him.
Young, very pretty.
Hard to tell now after he messed her up. Morris shook his head.
No, not really. Her bone structure, coloring. There's an ugliness to what he did here, but she shows through it.
She'd like to know that. Eve lifted her shoulders, let them fall at Morris's arched brows. You know how it is. They get in your head and you feel like you know.
Yes.
She mattered to him, in his own twisted way. He hated her for that. He didn't rape her.
No, Morris confirmed. There was no sexual activity, consensual or forced.
He might go there with another if he gets the chance. He orgasmed during the kill, so now he has a sexual connection. A bonus round.
This one's difficult for you.
I don't know why this one, especially, except we kept missing her. It's like everything was weighted on his side. We're trying to contact her, her neighbors looking out for her, and still he gets in, does this, walks away. Studying the body as he did, Eve hooked her thumbs in her front pockets. She was living cheap, you know. Padded crates, stringed beads for curtains in this little box apartment, but she kept it nice, kept herself nice. Worked hard, had friends, had family. He took it all because she wouldn't let him sponge off her anymore. Do nothing anymore. Her parents are wrecked. She paused, pinched the bridge of her nose as if to release tension. They told me her older sister and her spouse, their baby, were all in from Ohio for Thanksgiving. They were having a big family dinner. And this one here was getting some fancy dish from the restaurant where she works. I don't know why they told me all that. Sometimes they tell you things because they don't have anything else.
Death's cruel. Crueler yet at times when family traditionally gathers.
Yeah, and about that, they're gonna want to come in, see her. I don't know how much you can do, considering, but they shouldn't see her like this.
Don't worry.
He touched a hand briefly to Eve's arm.
We'll take care of her and them.
Okay, good. So, she had to put it away, out of her head, and do her job. The way it pieces together, he had keys, or he'd made copies. He went in when the neighbor went out. We have him sitting in a cafe across the street where he had a good view of the building. It was the Vic's regular day off, and from statements, she usually went out, ran errands, shopped, hooked up with a friend. When he saw the chance, he went in. He'd been shopping. We've got him coming and going on his hotel security cams. He bought the tape, the cord, and I'm thinking another baseball bat.
I'd agree with that. The head injury is consistent with a bat. It would have knocked her unconscious, but it wasn't a killing blow.
Or meant to be, Eve added.
He used good quality cord, strong and pliable. As you see from the ligature marks, he tied it as tightly as possible, much more than necessary to restrain her. She struggled, but it didn't help her. The tape, also good quality. She left teeth marks and blood inside. Some of that would be from the lip, open from a blow. He struck her with his fist.
Morris bawled his own. In the face, in the abdomen, in the right side. There's slight bruising around her nose and a deeper bruising on the nipple, from pinching.
I miss the nose. Very slight. You'd need the micro goggles.
This slight cut here, thin, sharp blade with a serrated edge. I can't tell you what sort. It's just a nick.
A warning. Just showing what he could do.
Most likely, yes.
As if to comfort, he laid a hand on Lori's shoulder.
But the lab may be able to identify the type of knife from the shorn hair.
I've got Harpo on the hair.
You couldn't do better.
He cut it before killing her.
Yeah, part of the torture.
Shifting, Morris turned his attention and Eve's to the throat wounds. Considerable force was used in the strangulation. He put his back into that. You can see how deeply the cord cut into her. From the angles and the crime scene record, he would have straddled her, looped it around her neck, twisting the lines in front.
He pulled his fisted hands apart sharply to demonstrate, leaving this pattern of bruising here where the lines of cord crossed.
She could see it perfectly. The positioning, the movements, the joy and the terror.
It's what got him off. That connection. Being on top of her, cutting off her air, feeling her body convulse under him. Being able to see her face while she fought for air, while she lost the fight.
Then he raided her kitchen for snack food.
He thinks he's outwitting you.
She brought herself back to the moment.
What?
He thinks he's smarter than you, than the police. He has no idea how well you already know him and how deeply you can go.
I know him, she agreed. But if I don't find him today, I'll be back in here tomorrow and we'll have this conversation over another body.
He's got a long list, Morris, and he's not going to wait to feel what he felt with her again. This is the biggest rush of his life, and now he's a man who loves his work.
Rather than wait for the report, Eve swung by the lab next. She didn't need to consult with Dickhead, Berensky, the chief lab tech, so wound her way through the maze of glass-walled rooms to Harpo's domain. Harpo had changed her hair. She'd gone for the short, straight bowl, almost identical to what Peabody used to wear. But Harpo had opted for shimmering ice blue. For reasons Eve would never be able to articulate or comprehend, it worked. Harpo had tossed a white lab coat over a purple skin suit, added a trio of dangling silver earrings to one ear, and a series of tiny purple studs to run up the other. She wore clear knee boots, which Eve assumed was a newly breaking style that showed off toes polished the same color as her hair and a foot tattoo, temp or permanent, who knew, in the shape of a long-legged bird. Whatever her wardrobe choices, Eve had reason to know when it came to hair and fiber, Harpo ranked genius. And right now, Harpo sat at her work counter, a sample of auburn hair in her scope, and its microscopic counterpart enhanced on her screen.
Is that my Vix?
Yo, Dallas.
Yo.
Recently color-treated. I can give you the brand, the color name, and the products used to style if you need them.
Never hurts, but I don't think it's relevant. Dr. Mira thinks the killer took some.
Yeah, so you said on the command. Request, she amended with the toothy grin. And props to Mira. Good eye. He took a hank 5 1/4 inches in length, 1.1 inches in width. I can give you the exact number of hairs in the trophy, but it's probably not relevant either.
Maybe it was Harpo's sass or her smarts, but Eve felt her own lips curve.
No, but impressive.
I so totally am. It's really nice hair. Healthy, clean. She didn't overproduct or heat. Natural color's brown, but she made a nice choice with this new hue.
She didn't get to wear it very long.
Too bad, because it's uptown. He didn't snip, by the way. Hacked, sliced, sawed. Not scissors, not a razor.
She did something that had the screen image revolving and different colors popping out.
Sharp, jagged-edged blade. I'm still analyzing and reconstructing, but it's looking like a one-sided blade about 3 1/2 to 3 3/4 in length, about 1 inch across, 1/8 inch deep. I think I can nail it down before I'm finished.
Just under legal limit for a pocket sticker.
It's looking, Harpo said with a head bob. I'm not going to be able to tell you the brand. I can probably give you a list of possibles. Now, if he'd stuck it in flesh, Morris could probably get close, or Birdman would punch it. He's the master of sharps around here.
Good to know.
Sweepers sent in some fibers from the body, but you said no rush on them.
We know what he was wearing and where he bought it. I needed to know if he took the trophy.
Definitely. My money-back guarantee on it.
And I could use the list of knives when you have it.
No prob. I'll have Birdman take a look. He may be able to cut it down some.
Speaking of birds, Eve glanced down at the one visible through the boot.
You like? I crush on flamingos, but I'm not so sure this is it. It's a temp, because you gotta be sure.
Eve couldn't argue with that.
Thanks, Harpo. Good quick work. Our house specialty!
She went back to it as Eve walked out.
2 steps into her bullpen, she stopped dead, pinned to the spot by Sanchez's tie. She looked away from it, fearing, like staring at the sun, she might go blind. It was the virulent color of an orange repeatedly exposed to excess radiation. On it floated searing yellow dots, unless they just floated in front of her eyes due to the 5 seconds she'd exposed her corneas.
For God's sake, Sanchez, what is that thing?
Retribution.
He glanced behind him, checked Jenkinson's currently empty desk.
Don't worry, boss. I'm not going to wear it out in the field. I mean, come on, I could blind people.
We're people, too, Baxter said behind the safety of his sunshades.
With a shake of her head, she started toward Peabody's desk, then changed her mind, signaled her partner to follow her.
Maybe you didn't have to actually look at it to go blind or start bleeding from the ears. Her office was safer.
Peabody clumped after her.
The crib is a crap place to sleep. I feel like I rolled around on sticks and rocks all night.
I told McNabb you weren't supposed to have sex.
Ha ha. As if you can even think about it in there. Plus, he may be bony, but he's got more padding than the cots up there. Anyway, I'm going to start calling the stores we ID'd, but in the meantime, I got a couple hits on items from the Reinhold apartment.
What and where?
I could think more clearly if I had real coffee.
For Christ's sake, get some then. What and where?
The Crystal Bowl. A shop just around the corner from the Grand Line. The thing with that... Oh, Mama!
She added, after the first big gulp of caffeine laced with milk and sugar.
The thing with that is, he didn't think it was worth all that much. Pawnbroker had a good eye, played him. That's my take from the way the guy danced around things when I pushed him on it.
Try for coherency, or I'm taking that coffee and pouring what's left over your head.
Right. I started making contacts, and when I hit this place, the guy got nervous. I got the didn't see the alert until a few minutes ago bullshit. But he came clean, mostly, I think, because he heard enough media reports on the murders to get edgy.
He hit that shop in the morning, not long after he hit the banks. About 10.
Yeah, right about 10, with the bowl and the diamond star earrings, the bangles in one of the suitcases. He grabbed the first offer of 900 on the bowl and 650 on the earrings, 300 and a quarter on the gold bangles. Turns out the bowl is worth about 10 times what Reinhold took for it.
Small satisfaction on that. We need that evidence picked up.
I sent out uniformed Carmichael, Peabody confirmed. And right after I did, another shop contacted me. I don't know, maybe the word went out or it was just good timing. Reinhold sold the rest of the jewelry there, got another $2,200 for that, then another $15 for the menorah, and $2,600 for the silver, the flatware.
Adding to his pile.
Yeah, not a lot, but decent when you add it up. The second shop is in the same area, about 5 blocks from the hotel.
He kept it close in, easy for walking. But he went out of his comfort zone for the big ticket items, the watches and the pearls.
I tagged Cardinini, Peabody added. She got the list from the neighbor, so she's hooking up with Carmichael, and they'll hit both shops to pick up the evidence.
That works. Eve answered absently, her mind still on the route, the choices of liquidation sites. He sold the bowl for a fraction of the worth, but he probably got more than he'd figured on. To confirm, Peabody pulled out her PPC, brought up her notes.
Kevin Quint, pawnbroker, stated, "I could see he didn't know what he had, so I lowballed it to get a sense, you know, and he snapped up the first offer like some rube from Kansas or somewhere. I figured him to negotiate some or whine how it was his dead old granny's, but he just said, pay me, like that, so I did.
Almost $1,000 for a stupid bowl. That's what he thought. His lucky day. But when he gets more than he figured for all the rest, it's a pattern even he can see, so he picks a classier place for the pieces he knows have real value.
Trading up, Peabody suggested.
Exactly. 3 generations in business, estate sales a specialty, and the sob story about his dead parents. It dawned on his stupid ass his parents had better stuff than he'd thought. It was all crap to him, just something to sell. He went to a higher class place because he wanted to make sure he got all he could get. She took a moment to get herself coffee. I bet he was pissed he hadn't taken more. The old stuff, the wedding canopy, the music box, everything he considered junk.
The second small satisfaction of the day, she murmured.
What else have you got?
I'm still working on finding the electronics, Peabody told her. He'd have to stick to the same area. What's the point in running all over hauling comps and links? I just finished generating a map and timeline of what I've got so far.
Send it to me. I'll merge it with what I got from his second hotel. Let's get it up on the board.
Wait!
Peabody stooped over Eve's computer, fiddled.
You've got it!
Keep on the electronics and the stores we nailed down. Give me a sense if we need to go by those stores for a face-to-face. We'll work on finding a pattern. If Feeney can spare McNabb, he might have a better sense of where Reinhold would try to turn the E-stuff using the map. I'm going to head up to EDD anyway, so I'll check. She glanced at the board. I hit the morgue, the lab. Morris's findings confirm ours, and Mira was right about the hair. According to Harpo, he took a good hank of it with him. And with her hair magic, she's working on IDing the knife he used to whack it off. She's got some blade guy on tap to assist.
Birdman?
Eve frowned. Yeah. Who the hell is Birdman?
He transferred from Chicago about 6 months ago. Callender went out with him a couple times. Didn't gel, but he's okay. And he really knows his sharps.
Why isn't he called Sharpman or Blade Guy?
He has a parrot.
That explains it. Did you read my morning report?
Yeah, and added Mal Gold's name to the hotel alert. He's probably sold everything by now, Dallas. Maybe he'll try to run.
He's not done yet. Let me talk to Feeney. Then we're going to generate a list of everyone he might go for. Relatives, friends, exes, crushes, bosses, co-workers, people who bugged him in school, teachers, doctors, neighbors. It's gonna be a long list, which is why he's not done.
She took the glide up. Entered the three-ring circus of EDD. Sanchez's retribution tie wouldn't cause a single flicked eyelash among the explosive colors, dizzying patterns, and unrelenting motion. She turned toward the blissful peace and what she thought of as the blandeur of Feeney's office. Stopped when she saw him talking to one of his geeks. He made a contrast in his dog-shit brown sport coat and industrial beige shirt. His wiry ginger and silver hair made its own mini-explosion around his comfortably saggy face. He swiped something onto a two-sided screen, and the geek responded with a rapid, incomprehensible spate of e-speak. After a few grunts, Feeney nodded.
Get it done.
All over it and back, Captain.
The geek bounced out on platform air boots. Eve angled toward the open door.
Hey.
Feeney sat back, sipped from a mug with a starburst pattern Eve assumed had been made by his wife.
Hey.
I got a couple things. Can I talk to you?
You already are.
Right. She went in and did something she never did. She shut the door. Feeney's eyebrows lifted.
Problem, kid?
Other than the fuckhole I'm after? Not really. I'd like to borrow McNabb if you can spare him. I'm trying to track electronics the fuckhole took from his Vix. He's been scattering his loot over Lower Manhattan, heavy on the west side. We're generating a route map. If we pin the electronics, it may give us more.
The boy's good at juggling. If he can keep his balls in the air, you can have him.
Appreciate it.
Did his parents, huh?
Slaughtered them, then tortured and strangled his ex.
He's a fucking moron, Feeney.
She slid her hands in her pockets, jingling loose credits. But he's cannier than I gave him credit for initially.
Right now, he's having the best time of his life. He's not going to want to give that up, to give up his good time.
Who's next?
That's the question.
You want to walk me through?
It was generous of him. He had his own work, but he'd listen. He'd bounce things off her, let her bounce them off him, and it might come to that. Actually, I had something else.
Unrelated. Or maybe, in a way, it's not altogether unrelated.
This is what you want, right? What you worked for. This department, this desk, the bars.
Watching her, Feeney dipped his hand into a bowl and popped a candied almond.
I wouldn't be sitting here otherwise. That's just right. She nodded, pacing, jiggling credits. You were a hell of a murder cop, Feeney. Knew how to train him, too. She smiled a little. That's just right. Medal of Honor, he said, and his Basset Hound face lit up. Ain't that a kick in the head? Yeah, it is. I guess word's out. They don't hand those out like gumdrops, kid. You did real good. And your man's getting something shiny, too. I'm real proud of both of you. Thanks. And that meant more than any medal. It feels weird. It's the bullshit around it feels weird, he corrected with precision accuracy. But they gotta throw the confetti and blow the horn, Dallas. It's a boost for the department and not just the PR, blah-de-blah, for morale. She hadn't wound her way through to that, but could see it now. Feeney saw it from the starting gun, she thought. And that's why he was who he was. I could do without the confetti and the blah-de-blah, but you're right. Feeney, you could have taken homicide, Captain, when the bars came to you, but you didn't. I'd had enough DBs for a while. She shook her head. That's not it. Not really, is it? It played a part. I needed a break from them, he admitted. See them in your sleep, don't you? She thought of Lori Nucho, one of many. God, yes. I needed a break from that. Oh, we still get them, but mostly as support, not primary. Mostly, maybe even more, I wanted the e-work. You're the best there is. He popped another nut. You don't hear me arguing with that. It keeps my juices going. And you're proof I've got a knack for training. I had a choice between EDD and homicide. I went with my gut, so I'm here. I've got my boys. He nodded toward his bullpen, where, regardless of body shape, his boys worked to their own drummer. I was a good murder cop. I'm a better E-man. Not altogether satisfied, she sampled some of the nuts from his bowl. Do you miss the field? I know you still spend plenty of time out in it, but I spend a lot with my ass in the chair. I'm good with that. Where's this going? Whitney offered me captain. First his mouth dropped open, then it rebounded into a wide, wide grin as he slapped a hand on his desk. About fucking time! I turned it down. My gut said no, she continued before he could respond. It said I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing now, and how I'm supposed to be doing it. I think I'd be a good captain. I'm a better investigator, so I said no. Am I stupid? He had to blow out a long breath, take a moment to evaluate. I gotta get over you said no. Okay, hell. From my seat, stupid's not listening to your gut. You'll take it when you're ready. But the point is, you earned it, and you earned it long before this. That's how I feel, she told him. I didn't expect the offer, and I sure as hell didn't expect to say no when it came. But that's how I feel. It's what I know. The bars matter, kid. But they're not the day in and out for cops like you and me. It's the job that matters. I didn't have to teach you that. You came in knowing it. I think about somebody like Reinhold and me reading reports on the investigation instead of investigating, supervising or approving ops instead of running them. I don't want to give it up, Feeney. Like Reinhold. Yeah. And like you and me, in a twisted way, he found what he really wants. He found it the minute he stuck the knife in his mother's belly. He didn't work for it, train for it. He wouldn't risk his life for it, but he'll learn, Feeny. With everyone he kills, he'll learn something new. Go back to the beginning.
Yeah, I'm heading there.
Thanks. Feeling more settled, she popped another nut. All around. She went, circling around the movement and mayhem, to McNabb's cube.
If you don't have anything hot, you belong to me today.
I've got some warm, no hot. I can multitask.
Coordinate with Peabody. Find the electronics. When you do, take them apart. I want anything and everything. He had to use the ones in his parents' place to do some of his research, his financial maneuvers. He'd have wiped them.
McNabb smiled.
He'd think he wiped them. Nothing's ever all the way clean.
Find them, she repeated. She went back down to homicide, and Peabody got up to follow her into her office.
Suit store? On the rack. He went in on Sunday, bought the suit, a couple shirts, some ties, socks. He had the suit altered, arranged to pick it up on Monday morning. Said he had other shopping to do. The clerk described him, once I loosened him up, as a snotty little jerk.
Sounds like a good judge of character.
I've got a list of what Reinhold bought there, and at Running Man, they were ready with it.
It's Rourke's, Eve said simply.
Yeah, I got that. Reports already sent to your unit.
Good. McNabb's gonna coordinate with you on the electronics. Keep at it.
We're open all day, Peabody said, and headed back to her desk.
Eve closed herself in her office. She worked with the maps, expanded her board, then sat, drinking coffee, studying the route he'd taken, his timing. Scanning Peabody's reports on his purchases, she cemented her image of him. Suits, ties, shirts. But beyond that, primarily the trendy. Air skids and boots, jeans, a leather jacket, the cargo pockets McNabb was so fond of, prime athletic wear, silk boxers. Clothes, she thought, that reflected his own image of himself. Important, stylish, edgy, and successful. Rich. He saw himself as a rich man now. She called up the locations of the stores he'd visited, added them in, calculated the most probable route and timing, added that. Skirting his old neighborhood, never going into it or not deep, detouring out to the east side, fresh turf. He buys things along the route for his new look, for his new vocations. A suit, shoes, cord, tape, athletic wear, a knife, a new link, but a drop link at least for now. A tablet? A PPC? Wouldn't he need to continue to research, to keep up with the media reports while on the street?
ID's the sticker, she decided. He has to get a new one.
Would he, as Rourke suggested, try to create one on his own? Curious, she brought up his file, ran through his employment and education history. No stellar comp skills or experience, she noted, despite the short aborted attempt to work in comp game design. Crapped out there. Barely passed basic comp science in high school, and that with an extra semester. Skin of his teeth in his two college e-courses. No, he didn't have the chops to create a passable ID on his own. He had to pay for one, or find someone to do it for him. She added every E instructor he'd had, grade school to a short college career. Lab partners? She wondered. She'd check on them when she contacted the instructors. Then there was gold. He had the chops, Eve imagined. but he wouldn't cooperate with Reinhold. Still, she took the time to contact him to confirm his safety. She learned he was still at his parents' and intended to stay there. Satisfied with that, for now, Eve looked back at her board. "Start at the beginning," she reminded herself. As soon as she generated what would be a very, very long list of possibles, she was going back to the beginning and the Reinhold apartment. It was starting to piss him off. "You're stalling, Ms. Farnsworth. I feel a snip coming on." Her eyes met his, wearily. "I tried to teach you, Jerry. Doing a project right takes time. If you don't do this right, it won't pass. If it doesn't pass, I know you'll hurt me. I don't want you to hurt me anymore, Jerry." She was stalling, a little. It took time to do a project right, especially when she needed him to carefully insert a beacon that would, she hoped, alert the police if and when the ID was scanned. Just as she'd needed him to undercode a message into the financial routing, she prayed someone with exceptional e-skills would find. Jerry's skills were good. Wasted potential, she thought. But he was lazy, simply too lazy to look deep to learn more. The ID was delicate and complicated work, and he was ham-handed and impatient, but they were nearly there. And she'd wheedled out a little water for herself and Snuffy, though he'd dripped it into her mouth, then her dog's, a few stingy drops at a time.
"I've got an appointment, goddammit! If I miss it because you're screwing around, you're losing two fingers, and your ugly dog loses an eye."
He took out his knife, snapped out the blade, and waved it back and forth in front of her face.
"I bet I can pop his eye right out with this."
Through sheer force of will, she kept her gaze calm and steady on his. "It's not going to take much longer, Jerry. It's a lot of data to upload if we're going to give you a complete background. Now you need to key in the next code exactly as I tell you."
Yeah.
He checked his wrist unit, one he intended to replace with something mag before he met the realtor. An asshole was due back any minute with the take from hawking the first round of electronics.
"You've got 20 minutes, he warned her.
"Master Command D, /generate. It had to be right, she thought, just exactly right, or he'd walk away clean. It had to be perfect, or the program itself would alert him to the addition. He'd make good on his threat then. Though she could no longer feel her fingers, she wanted to keep them. And Snuffy slept in her lap, a warm weight. His little chest rose and fell. As long as it did, she'd do what she could for him and for herself. And if the little bastard killed her, at least she'd die knowing she'd handed him the means to his own end. "Insert code 25, /B, she continued, her voice soft and slow. Her eyes filled with cold, feral hate. Chapter 12. Eve broke the seal on the Reinhold's apartment door and entered. It still smelled of death, with the lacing of the sweeper's chemicals. "We're going through it again."
"What are we looking for?" Peabody asked her.
Eve scanned the living area, still surprisingly neat and tidy in the wake of murder. He played Little League and kept the bat. Or more likely, his parents kept it. They'd have kept other stuff, right? Isn't that how it works? Parents hang on to things, to pieces of their kids. Photographs, sure, but mementos.
"Kid drawings," School reports, trophies, and awards like that, sure. Most would. Mine sure did. Do. Anything they kept, he didn't take, we look at. Family photos, too. Vacation and holiday stuff. Anything might connect to someone he's got a grudge against or somewhere he wants to go again. She walked into the kitchen. It started here. When he picked up the knife, turned it on his mother, that's when it all started for him. Reconstruction says she was here. It's lunchtime. He's fixing his lunch, or she's fixing it for him. She's fixing it. Eve put a picture of the mother in her head, as she'd been in her ID shot. She's fixing it because that's what she does. She fixes the meals, keeps the house. Probably a sandwich, so the knife's out. It's right there when he decides to do it. She's nagging at him. That's how he sees it. And seeing it herself, Eve walked around the table. You've got to get a job. Grow up. Get your shit together. Maybe she tells him she and his father are giving him a deadline or he's out. Maybe she didn't wait to confront him together with her husband. So he picks up the knife, jams it into her, and it feels so good. The look on her face is so satisfying, he does it again. Just keeps doing it, even when she tries to get away, when she falls, even when she's already dead. And then he eats his lunch. What? He ate after Nuccio. Had a big snack.